I came away from Dabaye camp with the feeling that despite decades of relying on handouts and the help of UN agencies and NGOs, these Palestinian refugees would much rather be masters of their own lives, their own destinies. But how to go about that if they can't find meaningful jobs? The idea has been percolating in my head for some time now. Find a way to help them help themselves. Why not a microcredit program that would give them the initial cash to start up a small business of some sort? I contacted the sisters at Dabaye Camp and told them of my idea. They were excited by the prospect and promised they'd talk with the women in the community and come up with some project ideas. But before I could talk to the Palestinians about their potential projects, I needed to find out more about microcredit schemes. I hadn't a clue towards getting one off the ground. So I found an expert from the International Fund for Agricultural Development, IFAD, to give me some background information and advice. Miriam Sharagoni is a rural financial expert for IFAD working in Western and Central Africa, with lots of experience managing microcredit programs for small farmers. My Palestinians don't have land to farm, but I was sure she could give me some ideas about where to start.
What you've described here is not only unique to Lebanon. I think it is the whole essence of the microfinance movement in the world, that a lot of people did not have assets to give as collateral, and also that they did not have land to produce something that can be used as collateral, like coffee. And even in Kenya, I mean, not even Palestine, women have a problem because they don't own any assets. And so it's always a problem to access finance, because if you think about finance in the strictest sense, that they would need a collateral. And collaterals are always very specific. And if you don't own a home, I mean, most of the times it is in these patrilineal societies that the inheritance goes to the male. And so, obviously, women are disadvantaged. And so the microfinance movement came about, and it does not require any form of collateral, because what you do is you just get together in a group of five, and these small groups is a self-selecting process where you select who you're comfortable with. And the microfinance institutions would come and train you on how to do this. So if there's no microfinance institution, you can also do it yourself, because in most countries, in Africa particularly, there's lots of just self-help groups that come together to do this. And you can obviously start with a savings mobilization process where you collect savings on a regular basis, first of all, to train them how to save. Once they can save a small amount, it doesn't have to be a big amount, but I think the importance of it is the regularity of savings. And then they can decide, okay, why don't we lend among ourselves to start with? And you can do small businesses like petty trade. You can sell, you know, dumplings. I mean, you can make mandazis. Mandazi is a pastry that you make with wheat flour. And you can stand outside your house and sell it. If you have a fridge, you can make some things for the kids and you can sell them. So this is how the microfinance starts. Of course, you start small like that, and then you build it up, and then you have a shop, and then you build from the shop. And I think it needs some entrepreneurial skills that you have to train them on. And once they start doing this, then they can rent land if they don't have. I'm sure they can rent land from somebody. But they need to have at least a base to start with.
What about external donors? I mean, if I were able to come up with a little bit of money, asking some financial help from some people, you know, could we buy, I don't know, sewing machines and get them some fabric so they could make children's clothes or T-shirts whatever? Then how does that work? Do they pay us back?
No. I mean, to start, first of all, there's lots of organizations that are involved in work that brings the community to a level that the microfinance institutions or finance institutions can pick up from. And there you cannot, if you want to support them, you can, let's say, okay, we're working in this community. I mean, IFA does this all the time. We're working in this community. We want the really poorer people to rise up to a level that they can access funding, for example. We give them assets. To at least, because that is normally the beginning of owning something, at least a chicken or goats or, you know, small stock. And through this small stock, they can look after them. And they it can generate something for them. For the women, it is always little activities like chicken keeping, and then of course those ones you cannot ask them to repay because they need to build up their savings to be able to do something more meaningful. So with that, you can start with grants to them, but it needs to be structured in a way that it can grow into something that they can then get themselves out of poverty. And there are lots of organizations that do this, I'm sure, even in Palestine.
I know a priest in one little village in the Holy Land who was able to get a donation to build an olive press, and the local farmers now have formed a cooperative, and they make their own olive oil, and they export it. He was also able to find a supermarket chain in France, which was willing to sell their olive oil in its chains of stores. But how do I help these people find a market for their products?
Okay, there are lots of organizations also who do that, who link farmers to markets, because also that is a very big challenge. For example, in Eastern Southern Africa, we've seen that is a very big problem. And even this morning, we are discussing proposals from different organizations who are interested in doing this with IFAD. And so you do a proposal and you try and solicit for funding to support these groups to link up. For example, Tradecraft, which is a UK organization, was funded to do fair trade and to link farmers from developing countries to supermarkets in the UK. One other interesting one is the World Food Programme, for example. You know, World Food Programme has been involved in relief food, but very recently they've now started a Purchase for Progress. And Purchase for Progress is essentially purchasing from the local countries in order to use this food for the relief work that they do. And the truth is, they are able to buy produce from farmers directly. And so this is one opportunity. I don't know if they are there in Palestine, but I'm sure this is one of the ways that you could assist them with linking them with these organizations.
One thing, since these people don't seem to have any collateral, as you call it, I was thinking something that could also take off there would be internet or computer services of some kind. Are you involved in that in any way in Africa?
Yes, I'll give you an example of one microfinance institution that is doing a lot more than microfinance. For example, based in Kenya, it is called Jamii Bora. Jamii Bora started by experimenting with lending to beggars in the streets. And they've worked with these guys, on savings mobilization. Then they've given them loans, and these guys have grown out of poverty. And recently they started a housing scheme where they could contribute towards owning their own home. And I remember just recently we had the microcredit summit in Kenya, and the Jamii Bora was handing keys of the first beggars that graduated into owning their own homes, and everybody was in tears just to see that it is possible for just an individual, Ingrid, who thought about this and started working with these guys. So there's lots that you can do, even though, it might look difficult, but one person can change the whole way that people see other people. So I think in terms of computers and doing things like this, I mean, that is, to me, a very good thing. For example, these guys are living in small boxes. If there's a way that you can get the government to get them a small land, that you can build a resource facility where you can put the computers and put some TV for the kids and get them some videos to try and see and understand, things and try and even create. In Kenya, for example, we have resource centers where in villages where, for example, Isipe wants to conserve the forest, and the communities have been destroying this forest, and so they set up a resource center where people can go there and learn about protecting forests and how can they live harmoniously with the forest. And they developed little ecotourism centers within the forest where the youth could benefit from taking tourists there. And all of a sudden, a whole enterprise, develops in a community. So each place, there must be something that they have a comparative advantage, and you can just zero in on that and try and work with them to develop that and develop an enterprise out of it.
It's all very interesting, Miriam. Thank you so much for sharing all this with me. Just one more thing. I have two young children, and I'm trying to think, how can I get them involved in doing something positive to help other people? And, I look around and I think, gee, I've got 10 pairs of
eyeglasses, old eyeglasses, the prescriptions are no longer good for me, just sitting in a drawer, couldn't I get other people like me to donate their glasses, which I'm sure would be very, very useful and are extremely expensive for people in Africa? I mean, what about things like that or bicycles? I understand that bicycles, old used bicycles, I've got one in the garage, my kids have outgrown it. What do I do with it?
In fact, exactly. I mean, this is how you train children. One of the things that, you know, I went to school in Canada, and I learned something there where people are taught to be philanthropic from when they're very small. In Africa, we didn't have that. I found it is giving is not something that comes natural. You have to teach people how to give. And one of the ways that, for example, in Kenya that I've seen that happening is that there are schools that are normally for well-off families, I mean, like private schools where kids of people who can afford can take their children there. And I'm privileged that my son also goes to a school like that. And what they have done is to try and show these children that they're very privileged and they have too much. they link them with a public school in Islam. And they collaborate with those students. You know, they have exchange visits just for them to see the realities of other children. You know, it is not everyone has everything the way, you know, most kids that are in private schools have. And then they organize to exchange things like, you know, their old shoes, their old uniforms. And they do visits. They do soccer games. They bring clothes from school and give them and sort of, you know. So you see that they begin to grow together. So you can do such things, which I thought was quite innovative, to try and just pick one school at a time and link with one other school and build one school at a time. The other thing that I also saw is that this problem, in fact, we were just discussing with somebody who works for World Food Program working on girls' education. And she says that one of the problems that they've seen is the dropout rates of girls is very high. And this is linked to school feeding. You know, they're doing school feeding. And so the more you provide school feeding, the more kids, girls stay in school because then they can take some of the oil home. And, you know, it becomes like an avenue for the family to get something to eat. And then the other thing that I've seen in Kenya, for example, the dropout is because of lack of sanitary towels. Every time a girl is having a period, then she stays at home, even if it is exam time, because they don't have sanitary towels to sit properly in school. Hmm. And so then one person on a radio station like you started to mobilize everyone and said we must keep more girls in school. And it has become a huge movement where we all buy sanitary towels in the supermarkets and drop them at a point. And all the schools, they distribute sanitary towels the way we distribute other things.
Miriam Sharagoni, Rural Financial Specialist for IFAD. My thanks to her for sharing her thoughts on microcredit and other schemes helping people help themselves. Well, stay tuned to this spot to find out how far I've gotten on this project in coming months. I'll be sure to keep you up to date.